Welcome to the Mountain Grapevine program on WART Community Radio for Madison County, North Carolina. My name is Chuck Blethyn, your host for today's program. The Mountain Grapevine reports on all things grape and wine in the mountains of western North Carolina, and sometimes elsewhere. My programs will have interviews with movers and shakers in the viticulture and wine industries, as well as some educational sessions on wine etiquette, wine evaluation, and special value-added products that can be made from grapes. Today on our radio show, we're going to have a conversation with Dr. Timothy Wall, who's the owner and winemaker of Adagio Vineyards in Elkins, North Carolina. His winery submitted a wine that won a gold medal at the Asheville Wine and Food Festival this year, and we'll be talking about that in a little bit. But first, we'd like to hear about you, Dr. Wall, and also the history of your vineyard.
Thank you, Chuck, and please call me Tim.
Okay, thank you.
We started this as a 10 years ago, actually. We bought our property in Elkin, North Carolina in 2005. We planted our first grapes in 2009. At that time, we had four varietals planted on 4 acres. We are currently up to 7 acres in grapes and also currently have 5 varietals. We opened our tasting room just about a year and a half ago. That's actually located about a mile away from the main vineyard that has a little baby vineyard next to it. Our main vineyard was up in the hills, a little too remote. So the tasting room is just a little bit closer to town next to some of the other tasting rooms. Adagio stands for this basically a musical term, meaning slowly with passion. And this was my wife's idea. My wife is a violinist, also a dentist.
I wondered where the naming came from, because I noticed that everything on your website has to do mostly with music of one kind or another. So it's nice to know where that came from.
It was her idea to combine our love of classical music, and she's a violin maker as well, and this was a way that we could combine our love of music and wine together. And what better way to describe, you know, what you like in life, music, food, relationships, wine, other than slowly with passion.
Talk to me just a moment about the selection process for which grapes you put in the ground, Tim. It's always of interest to our listeners who are thinking about putting in a vineyard, what the thought process is and how you went about selecting the particular varieties that you planted.
Well, we probably made the same mistakes that everybody else makes.
Oh, now, come on.
We picked wines that we liked, and sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. And I'll give you an example. We picked our first 4 varietals. We planted one hybrid, Americanized hybrid, which is Traminette, which is our hallmark wine right now that we make our Vivace out of. And then we planted a Chardonnay, we planted a Merlot, and we planted a Tempranillo. And the Tempranillo we tore out after 3 years because only 1 out of every 5 vines would survive a winter. The Chardonnay did fine to begin with. The Merlot did fine for a couple of years, and then they started to decline a little bit. So I think it's dependent upon the not only the terroir, but also elevation. We're about 1,400 feet, so we're a little higher up than everybody else in our area. And the winters, last couple of winters, were brutal, so we went back and replanted more Traminette. The hybrids do wonderful. We planted a new hybrid called Arundel, which is similar to a Petit Verdot, but it's a Americanized hybrid out of Cornell, 3-4 years old. And then we planted some Cabernet Franc that grows very well. So some of it's trial and error. Some of it's just, well, you think you know what you want, and it doesn't work, and you got to do something again. So we're finding that the hybrids tend to grow really, really well in North Carolina.
Yeah, it's interesting to have the conversations that I've been having for the last several months with various winemakers and vineyard owners around the part of the state here, mostly in Western. Of course, you're up in the Elkin area, not too far from, I guess you're actually considered part of Yadkin Valley, are you?
Right, we're in the heart of the Yadkin Valley.
At elevations of 1,600 feet and above, you really start getting really severe cold hardy problems. My vineyard here is at 2,100 feet. And we tried a number of different grapes here. It didn't work out very well, but we finally went along with a native one called the Catua Muscadine. It's the only cold hardy muscadine. You don't spray it with anything. It goes through the most severe winters with no damage at all. It's absolutely a fabulous cold hardy grape. But that's the biggest challenge that most of the vineyard owners I've talked to is getting the right grape for where they are in terms of the weather and the altitude. So it sounds like you made one of those errors that everybody likes to admit to after the fact.
Yeah, exactly. The hybrids, the Traminette and the Arundel, are similar to that no-spray variety. Last 2 years, other than just a brief spray for beetles, we haven't touched them with anything. And they grow tremendous. The vigor is just wonderful. The output's great as far as yield. The flavors are great. It's just one of the things that I guess we were new enough coming along that none of the other growers really had the expertise to say, you really shouldn't plant this. You really shouldn't plant this. You should plant this instead. We sort of found out that way, you know, along the way with everybody else. Now everybody's doing the same thing. They're ripping out Chardonnay. They're putting in Traminette. They're focusing on the hybrids more.
Well, for the benefit of the radio audience who are not familiar with Traminette, I think that's the one that's similar to Gewürztraminer, isn't it?
Yes, it is a hybrid of Gewürztraminer. The Gewürztraminer is the same as a Traminette.
Okay.
So it is a hybrid. It came out of Cornell in 1956. It's predominantly planted up in the Finger Lakes area of New York and Pennsylvania up in the Northeast.
A good choice for here.
Yeah, the west part of North Carolina, where we are in the Northwest, they're similar to the Northeast. The rootstocks, you know, most of the rootstocks would do real well, come out of the Northeast. So we're really pleased with the Traminette.
Okay, so we've talked about your vineyard a bit and the process of selecting grapes. Let's talk about the winery end of things. Where is your winery exactly located, and how big is it? How's your capacity? What's your future plans? That sort of thing.
The winery itself, we took over an existing structure that is two stories. The actual winery itself is built underground into the grape, sort of like a split level. And that's 3,000 square feet underground. The tasting room is directly above it. It's 2,400 square feet. It was built by my builder that built my barn and some other things, other structures out in the vineyard. And it was going to be his showroom. This was back in 2009 when the market started to tank, so he never really could do anything with it. So it was simply at the shell. And it happened to be the exact same design that we had come up with to build out on the vineyard property. And it was just one of those aha moments where he said, well, look, you know, we're designing this building for you, but I've already got the building made, so why don't you just buy this instead? So it was a perfect fit for us. Like I said, we have 3,000 square feet underground. That is all the walls, ceilings are all waterproof. We have 550-gallon square stainless steel tanks that are made to fit in the small spaces. Currently, as far as capacity, it has capacity to do about 2,500 gallons. At this point, it's engineered, so we have four tanks. It's engineered, we can add up to 10 tanks if we need. We have a special flooring that's a poured urethane on top of the concrete to prevent cracks in the concrete, because when you get to drop something and get cracks in the concrete, that's where the fungus gets in, that's where the bugs get in. And then you have to use all sorts of harsh caustic chemicals to get things out. And this protects the concrete, and it's waterproof. So all we do is clean with steam and water and organic cleansers.
You said it's a polyurethane coating?
It's a poured urethane. Poured. It's like they used to do it in your garage back in the 60s. So it's powder and adhesive, powder and adhesive. It's very similar to that, but it's stronger than concrete.
Okay, got it. Yeah, I did a couple of those garages back in the day.
Yep, very similar. We do everything by hand. We bottle by hand. We have a label machine that we cork by hand, bottle by hand.
So how many cases or bottles are you producing this year?
This year we're just, I'm only doing about 350 cases this year. I'm just doing three white wines this year. We did about 500 cases of reds last year, and then another 150 of whites. So we're focusing just on the white wines for this year so we can start moving some product through. Unfortunately, all wineries will tell you it's the exact same thing. The one thing they don't think about is dry storage space. Once you've got all these cases of wine, where are you going to put it?
Exactly. Several people mentioned that as a problem.
Yeah, and we're at the point now where I think after this 350 cases, I'm not going to have room to put anything else in the winery, so I need to start getting out of the winery.
Sorry, how long do you plan to keep your 350 cases there?
Well, hopefully we'll get rid of those in a year, so that's what we're hoping.
It's not like it's a seasonal thing. It's just that that's where you're storing it for the moment until it sells.
Right.
Okay, got it.
It has to stay there. We've got probably 18 barrels in there. We can only stack them too deep or too high because we've got lower ceilings, so that takes up room as well. We have a dedicated storage area for the actual wine itself, so it's not actually out in the working area of the winery, which is nice. So things get sprayed around, we're not going to get wet boxes. So that helps.
You actually grow the grapes and make the wine that you grow, right?
We use our grapes. We also use some of our neighbors. So we've got a couple of growers around us that just grow grapes, but they don't make the wine. So we like to use some of their product as well to augment ours.
Mm-hmm.
We do one of our hallmark wines that actually won the silver medal in Asheville is a 50-50 blend of Merlot and Petit Verdot. We do Merlot, but we don't do Petit Verdot, so we buy that from our neighbors.
Mm-hmm. Petit Verdot is a relatively new grape to this region, but I've talked to several vineyard owners, and it seems to be doing quite well.
It does. We actually did a small batch, about 50 cases of 100% Petit Verdot that we just released, and that's come out to great reviews as well. It's an interesting grape that you never, well, you know, in France, it's a blending grape. You rarely will see it used more than maybe 5 or 10%.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got a great flavor, I think.
We got a couple friends who have just a backyard vineyard with the Petit Verdot in it, and the homemade wine that they've come for them. I'm just encouraging them, hey, go commercial. That's a good bottle.
Yep.
Good stuff. On the next question I'd like to ask you is, when you are making your wine, you're obviously doing some blending, and the radio listeners are always interested in how you choose which wines to blend and how do you make the ultimate choice of what the final percentages are going to be.
You know, ideally, the way we ideally try to do this is we will sit down, myself and my wife will sit down, and we'll pour glasses out with different concentrations of different blends, additives, whatever we want to make it taste like. And we'll just take notes and see where we agree. Do we like it here? Do we like it there? And then we try to match. Then you can match that blend on a grand scale through the tanks. Yeah, it's just called, it's milligrams per liter trials.
It's purely tasting, is what you're saying.
It's purely tasting. Now, on the flip side of that, there's always, because this is a commercial business, you're going, well, if I do this, I might be left with, you know, 60 gallons of this wine. What am I going to do with it? Well, and so it's like having the, you know, the little evil guy on one shoulder and the good guy on the other shoulder saying, blend it all, blend it all. The other guy's like, no, you only want to blend for the taste. You only want to blend for the taste. So that's always sort of, you know, out there in your ear. You just blend it all together, but we really try to maintain just blend for the taste that you want to get.
Sure, I'd like to hear a little bit about the decision-making process when it comes to making a wine that you like versus one that you think you will sell. A lot of winemakers struggle with that part.
It's very difficult. I'll be right up front. I'm not a sweet wine person. I like a dessert wine occasionally, like an ice wine, a Sauternes, something like that, but I'm not a sweet wine person. And in North Carolina, you have to make sweet wine if you're going to sell some wine. It just comes down to that.
Well, this is the South, you know. Every time you go in a restaurant here, they ask you tea, sweet tea or unsweet tea.
Right, and they'll buy sweet tea and put sugar in it. So it's, you know, you have to make a sweet wine. So my bow to that the first year was we just made a dessert-style wine, which is a Traminette blend. But we didn't make it super sweet. We made it sort of on the level of an ice wine. So it's slightly sweet with some citrus, and that was as much as I could get myself to do. I really couldn't come out and make a sweet wine. And I still had trouble doing that, even though the other wineries would say their best sellers are sweet wines. And my answer to that is I understand that, but I'm trying to get a market outside of just the local area too, so we want to be known as a serious winemaker as well. So the one thing I'm going to do this year, I've got a rosé coming out in time for the holidays. It's still not sweet, but it's not dry. It's going to be in that off-dry range, maybe 1% residual sugar that gives you that perception of sweetness, but it's not a sweet wine. And I think with the Traminette, especially the hybrids, the Traminette that we did, you can do that so you get the perception of sweetness, but it's just the fruit that's coming through. It doesn't have to be a, you know, super, super sweet wine.
Well, Tim, we're going to take a break at this point in time for a commercial break, and we'll be right back. Hang on, folks. Our program today is being brought to you by Sandy Sudbutt's Corn Silk Tobacco Substitute. Most of the folks here in Madison County know that tobacco has gone from our mountain farmers as a cash crop. Farmers all over the county are searching for a substitute, but none so far has been found as an annual crop. Grapes do offer a possibility, but the long-term commitment is something that most farmers cannot afford. Sandy Sudbutt lives back on Laurel Gap and is a third-generation cornpipe smoker. Her doctor finally told her to stop smoking to preserve her health, what health she has left. But Sandy's a determined old gal and never has been able to get more than an hour or so go by without needing to get her corncob pipe lit up and puffing like a steam train. One day she got an idea to try stuffing dried corn silk in her old corncob pipe and lighting it up. It wasn't tobacco, so she knew her doctor wouldn't mind. She says the taste is similar to tobacco, with a slight corn taste to the smoke, but without the nicotine and other health-harming smoke components from tobacco smoke. Sandy experimented with many alternatives, but the corn silk was her choice to stuff in her pipe. Over the summer, she tried fresh corn silk, slightly browned corn silk, and totally dried dark brown corn silk. The slightly browned corn silk, just as corn was starting to ripen, tasted the best. She experimented with a variety of mountain herbs to add a little extra taste and interest to her smoking. Her mint patch out back by her pigsty was her favorite. Sandy added a few other wild herbs to her mix, and finally was satisfied she had the best combination. Now she can light up her old corncob pipe and truly enjoy her smoking. It wasn't long before her dad noticed what she was doing. He liked the smell of her smoke, so he decided to give it a try. He was sold on her idea after one puff. Several of her friends tried it and agreed that she should make it available for everyone who enjoyed a pipe now and then. Thus, Sandy Sudbutt's corn silk tobacco substitute was born. She had her cousin begin making corncob pipes in his corn bin at his farm so Sandy could sell her corn silk tobacco substitute and a corncob pipe as a package deal. It's turned out to be a real trend here in the mountains. Every farmer you see these days is walking around Madison County with a corncob pipe in their mouth. Sandy Sudbutt's corn silk tobacco substitute is another special product made in the good old U.S. of A. here in Madison County, North Carolina. You can buy Sandy Sudbutt's corn silk tobacco substitute and Sandy's corncob pipes today at Zuma's Cafe in downtown Marshall for only $1.298. And now back to our regular program. Welcome back, folks. We've been talking with Dr. Timothy Wall, the owner and winemaker of Adagio Vineyards in Elkin, North Carolina. In this section of the program, Tim, let's talk about how you became a winemaker.
Well, this whole thing sort of started as a dare from my wife.
A dare, really?
Yes, she was already making violins and asked what I was going to do when we decided to sell our dental practices. And she promptly told me the four things I couldn't do. And she said, well, you know, you like wine, you collect wine, so why don't you explore that? So I went and did a 3-year online certificate program at the University of California, Davis in winemaking. And that's where I learned the winemaking skills. And then when we finally decided to get things going up here, our very first year, our winemaker was Sean McRitchie out of McRitchie Vineyard and Cider Works. So I worked with him on our first wines. And then I simply took over the last year to make our second vintage.
Well, I have to tell you that McRitchie has been a great boon to a number of winemakers around the area. He's a fabulous winemaker.
Yes, he is. He's got a lot of people started. He does some great wines. We still collaborate on some things, but he's sort of one that helped me take the book knowledge to here's how you actually have to do this and how you actually have to handle the day-by-day operation.
I've heard nothing but really wonderful things about some of the other winemakers in North Carolina being able to share and help each other. It seems to be one of the strengths of our viticulture industry here in the state.
It really is. Everybody collaborates. They help out. It's funny because being in the dental business, it's almost the opposite in healthcare. So it's been a lot of fun.
They say if you can make a living at something you're really passionate about, you know, people think you should actually pay them to be able to do it. So it sounds like you've hit on the right tune. With the information you gained on the 3-year certificate at UC Davis, they do have one of the better programs in the country. I've looked into that myself, but I prefer to stay on the grape growing side of it. So I collaborate a lot with the folks up at Appalachian State University and also in Surrey, as you know. So most of the folks there know me. We put on a grape conference down here once a year in Marshall. And over the years, we've had probably, several hundred people attend. And we started probably 4 or 5 vineyards as a result of that. So it's a nice environment, and as you know very well, the industry here is growing like leaps and bounds, so it's the very beginning of the viticulture industry and development here in North Carolina, and we're tickled that folks like you are coming in to do this, And to be able to taste the wonderful wines like the Vivace is wonderful. So what's your plans now for the next 3 or 4 years with your vineyard and your winery?
Well, the vineyard, we're actually currently going through some replantings right now because of the unfortunate winters we've had the last couple of winters. We lost a great deal of our Chardonnay. We just replanted some Merlot. We've planted some Cabernet Franc. Our Arundel will be coming online this year, so we're going to have some interesting red blends coming out next year. Like I said, we're starting, doing our first rosé that's coming out now. And we're doing a barrel fermented Chardonnay, which is a particular style that I like. So I'm doing a barrel fermented Chardonnay that will be coming out in the spring. We don't really plan to increase our production as much as focus on the quality and making sure we can try to repeat quality each year. I think sometimes that's difficult given that harvests can be different year by year, and sometimes the quality of the product can vary. So I think it's important to try to be able to mimic and reproduce exactly what you had that was good.
Yeah, it's a sign of a good quality vineyard to be able to do that in a winery. I know nature being what it is, sometimes it's difficult to get exactly the same quality of grapes year in, year out, but hopefully it's close enough that you can make the final adjustments in the winemaking process to be able to do that. I don't know if you're familiar with the French Broad Vignerons.
Yes. Matter of fact, we were invited, because of our success in Asheville, we were invited to join, and we've recently joined the organization.
Oh, fantastic. Well, my wife Jeannie and I started that organization about 5 years ago with six people, and we're up to about 600 people on the list now. Probably have about 100 and some active members that are really involved with it. You've probably been talking to Pete Fland, who's the president of the organization this year.
And he was instrumental. He was the one that asked us to join. And matter of fact, we were just down in Asheville this weekend and dropped off some wine that's going to be featured in the McNeil Uncorked.
Yeah, I was going to say that we've been able to collaborate with the Great Smoky Mountain Railroad. I did a narration of one of the trips about a month or so ago. And it's very, very interesting to be able to show the best wines from North Carolina to all the people who come there and visit from all over the world. And this is important for us in helping to develop the reputation of having quality wines in North Carolina. 9 out of 10 people who've gotten off of that train have told me personally, I can't believe how good the wines are that you served here, and they're from North Carolina. And that's exactly what we want to be able to do.
Well, you probably know this, but I have a lot of people come to the winery and they ask about, well, how new is the industry? And I say, well, you know, when we bought our property, our vineyard property in 2005, there were 5 wineries within an hour drive. There are now 40 within an hour drive of us.
Yep.
And the quality continues to increase year in year. And if you look at the entire United States as far as wine sales, North Carolina is 5th in the country right now.
Yeah, it's coming on strong. I know the quality issue has been improving, as you said, but we've been here 8 years, and when we first came, there were 60 wineries in the state, and as of January 1 this year, I think the number was 216 if you include the 20 cideries. It's grown phenomenally fast, and the best part of it is the quality across the board just keeps improving, and that's just outstanding in my view.
Yeah, it's definitely gotten much, much better even since when we first started. You can tell year by year, and I think that's something that all the wineries are striving for now. It's not just putting out a product, but you want people to come back. If you serve bad wine, they're not going to come back.
That's
so you've got to serve good wine. So
that's exactly right.
You know, you're only new once.
Yeah, unfortunately, we've done some research on this. I'm on the board of directors of the North Carolina Muscadine Grape Association because all I do here is muscadines. And we've done a lot of research in collaboration with the North Carolina Wine Growers Association. And it shows that people who want to buy a bottle of wine, something like 94% of the decision-making process in a typical wine shop is based upon the color of the bottle and the design of the label.
Right.
You know,
right.
And it's just wrong. Right. So everything that we're doing is to give people exposure. We also do the wine education classes every year, so that's been helpful too. If somebody wants to come down and try out some of your goods there, how can they find your wines? How can they find you? How can they reach out?
probably the easiest way if you're not directly in the area. We're located at 139 Benz Drive, which is in Elkin, North Carolina. Elkin is about 9 miles north on Interstate 77 from where Highway 421 intersects. Coming from Boone, going to Winston-Salem.
Okay.
We're about just over an hour north of Charlotte. We're maybe 40 minutes from Boone. Our website is www.adagiovineyards.com. All of our wines are available on the website. We're on Facebook as well. Our tasting room is 2,400 square feet, like I said, above the underground winery. It is what we refer to as rustic on the outside and very elegant on the inside. We have three tasting bars that are all granite. We have fireplace inside. We play classical music. We have actually do classical violin concerts monthly. My wife plays as well as a friend of hers from the Winston-Salem Symphony, so we'll do duets monthly. We also do art classes. We do custom coaster art classes, bottle art classes, bottle lights, all sorts of things. We do a lot of arts and crafts stuff throughout the year, usually at least 2-3 weekends every month. Our wines, currently we are serving a 2013 Vivace. All of our wines are musical terms. So Vivace means lively. And our Vivace 2013, we've only got about 10 cases left of that. That's a Traminette blend that was 80% Traminette. Our gold medal winner in Asheville was our Vivace 2014, and that is 94% Traminette. I think we still have maybe 80 cases of that out of 140 that we started with. We have a rosé coming out called Minuet, which is actually made from 100% Cabernet Franc.
A Cabernet Franc rosé. That sounds interesting.
Yep. Cabernet Franc rosé. I actually got the idea from Steve Shepherd at Raylan Vineyards. He happened to come by for a tasting, and we've been friends for a couple of years, and I said, I was thinking about doing a rosé. He goes, why use this particular clone of Cab Franc we have? We said, I've got plenty of grapes. Why don't you just use those? And I said, fine. So we picked up the grapes and started the rosé. So we're going to actually compare our different rosés with each other and see which one we like.
I love the chance to do the comparisons.
Yeah. We've also, that's the white wine right now. We have a dessert-style Traminette, which is about 2% residual sugar. That has a little citrus component. Tastes like more similar to an ice wine as far as the body. And then we have our red wines are called our Chacon, which means variation on a theme. And that was our first red wine that is actually a blend of 60% Merlot, 30% Pinot, and 10% Petit Verdot. We have our Harmony, which we just introduced this fall, and that actually won the silver medal in Asheville, and that is a 50-50 blend, Merlot and Petit Verdot, and then we have 100% Petit Verdot as well.
Well, certainly you've got a batch of really nice-sounding wines that I would want to go try some more of. I've only had the chance to try the one, the Vivace, because I was involved as one of the wine judges there at the Asheville Wine and Food Festival, but if it's like any of the other wines that you have there, I'm telling you, I've got to taste them all. It sounds really wonderful. We've been speaking with Dr. Timothy Wall, who's the owner and winemaker of Adagio Vineyards in Elkins, North Carolina. Tim, I want to thank you personally for joining us today and helping give some listeners some more information about you and your winery and give them some incentive to come down and try some of your wines.
Well, thank you very much, Chuck. It's been a pleasure.
This is the Mountain Grapevine on WART Community Radio from Madison County, North Carolina. If you have a friend whom you think might enjoy my program, tell them my Thursday programs will be rebroadcast on Sundays at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. This is Chuck Blethyn signing off for today. Cheers!